listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow.
This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Empower the Spirit. Today is July 31st, 2011, last day of July. My name is Doug Kelly. I am so glad that you are with us tonight. Tonight, we're going to be continuing our discussion on reincarnation and past lives. And just for those who are new to the show or listening to the archives for the first time, Empower the Spirit is a weekly broadcast of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science as part of our regular church services. It's our mission to explore and empower the human spirit. And so as a result, we will talk about many practical life skills, spiritual issues, metaphysical issues, and of course that's a very broad field. So we talk about those each week. We would like to welcome those who are listening to the live program and those in the chat room. Good to have everyone here, as well as those who are listening to the archive. Nice to have you as well. Now tonight, of course, the first part of the program is going to be my part talking about regression and past lives. And you know, don't forget to stay tuned for Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective coming up in about an hour or so. She'll be taking your calls, offering psychic advice, help for any situations you got going or questions you got cooking. So be sure and stay with us for that. Tonight, I have a special guest, Melissa Watts. She is a certified hypnotist, past life regressionist, if that's even a word, it sure sounds good. And I had an opportunity to interview Melissa about, I don't know, a week and a half or so ago on my Paranexus Universe radio program, and it's so good to have her here to talk about this with everybody that follows this program. Melissa, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you, Doug. It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. We had such a nice interview on the other program that I thought, wow, this is perfect for this show. Perfect for this show because, you know, obviously reincarnation, whether we have past lives or not, is a big existential issue, you know, life and death. And it gives us some glimpses perhaps of what's to come. And you know, I would, from my understanding and my research, it seems like a goodly amount of the world believes in reincarnation in one form or another, if not most of the world. I mean, the Christian part of the world doesn't, but, well, you know, officially, but a lot of people do, you know. So funny. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm a Christian. Just believe whatever I want. But, you know, the official stance of the church or churches or whatever the religion is, they don't typically. And I, you know, and I'm not terribly familiar with Islam, but I would imagine they don't either. But I don't know, so I can't say for sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't either.
So let's start this off with a little background. Give us a little bit of your background, how you got into this, and don't forget to throw in a mention of your website and your book, too.
Sure. Actually, I have, most of my life, I've always been a seeker of things of the unseen, things beneath the surface, you know, metaphysical type things, as far back as I can remember. So I've always had an interest. It was a natural desire, a natural calling, I guess you could say. But it wasn't until after having several, for lack of a better word, traumatic or interesting life experiences that led me to go to see a hypnotherapist some years ago. And the experience that I had after seeing the hypnotherapist, to have my own personal past life regression, having that experience changed my life forever. And it kind of, if any of your listeners, if you remember, Doug, the game Tetris, mm-hmm. when everything comes together, it mm-hmm. just kind of, you know, and that's kind of how it was for me. It connected the dots, and so many things that I felt, so many things that I naturally knew or gravitated to, and then it answered a lot of questions of some of the things that was happening in my life at the time, and, you know, why am I here? There's got to be more to life than, you know, you're born, you go to school, you get married, you have children, and then you leave, and then that's it. You die, and that's it. And I always knew that there was more to it than that. And so my trip to the hypnotherapist some years ago, actually, when I sat down in his chair, when it was all over, some 3 hours later, I was a completely different person, and I had a completely different perspective on life,
mm-hmm.
on who I was, and the players in my life, and things really, really, really made sense.
Hmm. Cool. And please forgive me if I miss this. How long ago was your first, your own past life regression? The first one?
Oh, my goodness. About 8 years ago.
Okay, cool.
About 8 or 9 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how long was it after you had had your first session that you decided to do it on your own?
I would say I knew that at the time I knew that I wanted, or it was definitely in this life's path to help people. And I'd say it was probably a year or so, maybe 2 years later.
Okay.
A year or two, year and a half later when I finally realized that it was actually the hypnosis which was going to be my my tool. And I like to say that my tool and my little bag of tools of helping people and heeding to my calling. And so that's when I decided to actually go back to the hypnotherapist, who's a wonderful hypnotherapist here in New York. His name is Paul Aron. And I went back to him and actually talked to him about it and actually did my training and my studying with him, and he taught the classes and then expanded as I went in and went back to school and then went in to specialize in past life regression.
Cool. So you've obviously had some interesting cases or done some cases. And I know that I'm going to ask you some similar questions as we discussed on the other program, but we're talking to a little bit of a different audience. So what, you had your own experience with past life regressions, but, you know, and that's your own subjective experience. You've done other past life regressions for folks.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any cases that you were able to validate or verify historically?
That's a double-edged sword question for me, because in some cases I know that most people, I'll say it this way, most people think that everyone who has a past life regression experience, that they are some noble person or or Cleopatra or, you know.
They weren't?
And in most cases, my experience, no. And, you know, we're the everyday average people or souls going through our own progression and our learning. And so when you go back and try to validate things like birth dates and times and things like that, a lot of times you won't find those things. It's almost like if, you know, God forbid, if something were to happen to me or happen to you or, you know, my next-door neighbor, it wouldn't be a big deal. And if you were to go back and look through the archives, you know, 100 years from now, it's
right.
Just the average person. So, but what I do encourage for those of my clients that need some kind of validation, if it is needed, I don't definitely tell them, well, you have to go out and prove this to yourself, because it's all about the experience and what you take from it, and you and the person moves in their own path. But what I do suggest, if it is something that they need, is to go back and look timelines of the kind of clothing that they observed, the kind of buildings that they observed. you know, shoes, weaponry, different kind of things. And then they go back and see if they can do a little bit of research that will validate that the time frames, because I typically ask, well, what time frame is it? What country are you in? You know, what do you see? And, you know, just so they can have that understanding and that connection and that validation for themselves. So then if after a session you are seeing clothing and in your past life regression insight, when I ask, you know, what time frame it is or what country you're in and all of these things come about, then if you want to go to Google or go to that country or that time frame and find that what you witnessed or what you had on was very much what they're showing is what was worn in those times, that's as far as I will go as far as validation. I did have a client who was linked to a famous painter, and she actually went back and found some validation of some people and some names
cool.
that had come up in her past life. But other than that, I'm not really big on the validation. I think the times that we are in now, it's all about trusting your own experiences and going back and going within to validate and to trust your own inner guidance as opposed to really looking outside for proof. Because once we do that, it kind of separates us from who we really are.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point on the fact that in times past, especially in times really past, you know, there weren't any records, there weren't birth certificates, unless you were
right.
somebody of note, you know, of mm-hmm. fame, it would be impossible to even track that down. So that's a good point that you make. And you also make another good point that not everybody was Cleopatra and some mm-hmm. Egyptian pharaoh or, you know, whoever. So good points. Let me ask you this. In your past life regressions, have you noticed any kind of a common time frame that people seem to go back to? I mean, do they typically go back 100 years, 200 years, 50 years, 500 years, or is it just all over the place?
It's all over the place. It's the gamut. I see the gamut. You know, when a person comes to see me, they usually, typically, 98% of the clients I see are coming to me because there's some kind of issue that they're looking to resolve or some kind of problem, quote-unquote, that they're trying to get an understanding of. And that problem or that issue usually is brought in to this life, and it's tied to a lesson or soul progression. And that where that experience was picked up or where that experience, you know, where the energy is still being held in that life, it could be anywhere. So a person coming in could go back 50 years, 100 years, 3,000 years, and even to, you know, I've had people go to different planets.
Oh, cool. We'll get to that in a minute. But what you were talking about, there's actually a couple questions in the chat room from Vicky that are related to what you were just talking about. The first one is, how helpful and successful is past life hypnotherapy for people?
In my experience, very helpful and extremely successful. It brings such an understanding of self and an understanding of the issues. It changes the perspective of the pending issue that a person may be having or going through or holding on. It gives a completely different perspective. And it allows us, once you understand it, an understanding allows us to release the energy or release the painful memory or let it go to understand it,
mm-hmm.
which is causing the problem in the present life. So it is, my experience, very helpful and very satisfying.
Okay, so what you're saying is that recalling the experience helps them in their current lives now, right? That's the point you're making.
Yes, because of recalling, not just recalling, but in the recall, there is a deeper understanding of the reason why the issue. There's a deeper understanding of the lesson, and so there's a lesson learned or an understanding that is gained. So it's not just a recall, just to remember, to say, oh, okay, I remember that. But that typically brings such a profound sense of understanding.
So would this include physical afflictions of some types?
Yes, they have. Yes, they have. They
such as?
There was a client who had a problem with a neck problem that couldn't, you know, there was a lot of pain in the neck area, in the throat area, and couldn't, you know, the doctors couldn't find anything, the on medication, and it didn't work, and, you know, going back and forth to different specialists. And that's the other thing, too. By the time a person comes to see me, or usually someone, a colleague of mine, someone in my field, they usually have tried everything.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
right. Well, that's
like
true.
The last
absolutely. Absolutely. You're the one of last resort. Desperation.
That's right. And in this particular case, we wanted to go back to the life that where the pain had initiated from, sort of the initial sensitizing event is what we call it.
Right.
And in this case, this person had gone to I don't remember exactly what the time frame was, but it was a battle. And it was a battle in where this person had been stabbed in the throat.
Ooh.
And once receiving that and understanding that and having a profound sense of forgiveness and understanding that, it was an immediate release and felt better after, you know, we went through the session. It was a lot of emotion, a lot of emotional release, a lot of tears. And then she felt almost an immediate sense of relief once the session was over. And then, you know, just a couple of days later, completely was gone.
Well, let me
go
ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. When you're done, I'll ask.
So these things, they happen quite often.
So, all right. So let me ask you this then, since it's related to what you're talking about. One of my things with reincarnation, one of my I don't knows, and I'm talking about an alternative hypothesis, which I did share with you previously, but I want to bring it out to the table now. The language of the mind is visual. It's imagery, right? I mean,
yes.
We dream, we see images. They're metaphoric. When you're doing hypnosis sessions, you know, the hypnotist is using metaphors, using visuals, guided imagery, vivid imagery, all metaphoric. They all mean something. They all are for a point, right? So the language of the mind is visual.
Right.
And so my alternate hypothesis that I'm exploring, and you know, I'm not proffering it as the solution, as the answer. I'm just exploring it. I'm wondering.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I don't know if you've heard of Dick Sutphin. He's a fairly well-known hypnotist. A lot of CDs, a lot of books, and so forth out. And one of the things that I picked up from him several years ago that just intrigued me a lot was that when a person has a fear, let's just use a fear for example, a fear, say, of water or snakes or something, heights, whatever, and you try to address that with hypnosis, and you go back, and it may, the language of the mind may create a scenario, much like a dream creates a scenario, to explain it and to release it. So I'm wondering, I just want to get your thoughts on that. So, you know, I've got a fear of the water, and I go for a hypnosis session, and I am taken back to a, quote, past life where I drowned. And once, you know, I have explored that, touched that memory, touched that issue, and more accurately, touched that fear within my mind, within my consciousness, it releases that energy, much like what you've already discussed. And now I no longer have that fear. It's no longer as strong. Maybe another time or two will cure it completely. But my question to you is, what are your thoughts on that? What if it's not literally a past life, but rather the mind's way of speaking, of dealing with that fear?
Mm-hmm. Good question. You know, if take fear for, and you're right, fear can creep up and show its rear its ugly head in many different things. And you're absolutely right. But the way I work in, for me, is that I'm not really trying to get to the fear of the water. I work to get to the base of the fear.
Right.
And so if so, whatever the initial sensitizing event may be, and it may, and in some cases it doesn't tie into a past life.
Mm-hmm.
It could be something that happened at age two.
Sure.
Or at an infant. And
sure.
So what happens is when I'm working, I'm actually facilitating, because I'm not leading, but I'm facilitating to get to the bottom of what the fear is, because and you're right, the mind works, the subconscious works in imagery. It doesn't understand our linear words. It has nothing
mm-hmm.
to do with that. It's
mm-hmm.
it's visually, or it's images is how it communicates.
Mm-hmm.
And so wherever the client needs to go in order to release
right.
the energy, that is my intent. So if that means that he goes to these two, or if that means that in some form or fashion that the mind creates this imagery, but the bottom line is that there's an understanding of this fear and a release of the fear, then that's really all I'm doing.
Sure.
Because I'm very careful about bringing my images or my
mm-hmm.
understanding
yeah.
of what I think it may be. So when a person comes to see me, they literally come to see a blank slate. I'm very, very, very particular about that, because now what I do is I allow the person to lead me and kind of give me what it is that they're looking for, what the issues are, and then I take their information to facilitate them to get to the bottom of whatever the pending issue may be.
And, you know, you bring up another great point that I just want to do a quick sidebar on, and that's
mm-hmm.
not leading the subject, not leading the client during hypnosis. And, oh, man, I see so many do that, so many hypnotists do that,
mm-hmm.
and that is an absolute no-no in my book.
Yes.
And what I
yes.
teach in my hypnosis course, absolutely do not do it. And you know what? It can sneak up on you, too. So you got to think
right.
ahead. You know, you could end up including information in your question, in your metaphor, that the client has not given you. So the rule of thumb that I'm trying to put out there is never introduce new information when you're doing any
that's
kind
right.
of regression, like past life or in some cases, alien abduction regressions that some
right.
might do, you never lead them. So that was just a quick sidebar I wanted to get out there. But what I am really asking from you, too, is, you know, I know that as you're doing this, you know, you're a thinking person. You're obviously a very deep person. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, what are your thoughts regarding, is it a past life, a true past life, in fact, a true reincarnation event? Or is it simply the mind's way of communicating and dealing with issues? What do you think?
You know, that's a good question. My personal belief, which I keep outside of the office,
mm-hmm.
My personal belief is in the way that I work, where the person is led to go himself, you know, where he ends up. If he goes to a life, or if he goes to another planet, or if he goes to, my personal belief is that it is real.
Okay.
Because what my own experiences have showed me that we don't really make up anything that we're all one big memory.
Mm-mm.
And we're one big walking energy field with full of memories that we've blocked from ourselves. And so, you know, when we go to these things, or these places, it is my personal belief that these people or these clients, that they actually are going back to these places or these times. But I leave it to the person, because if the person feels that it wasn't and it was just an experience, that's okay too, because the bottom line for me is to deal with the intent, and the intent is to give relief or understanding of the pending issue. So how they come about it, you know, what they tell themselves the experience was or is or
mm-hmm.
Could have been, that, you know, that's kind of, that's a personal thing that I don't bring
sure.
into the office. But my personal belief outside the office is that absolutely it is, you know, we can only go into those places in ourselves that we've already experienced. It's just the tapping into the wealth of memories that we already have.
Well, and the reason, and maybe I should give you some background on why I'm even going there with this, that's what this whole program is about, is I'm exploring this because the type of metaphysics that I teach, not only on MCHS Church, but also the Metaphysics Institute, is, and I teach my students this, you know, if you're going to believe something, have a compelling basis. You know, try to have a logical, compelling conclusion, something that's logically defensible. So if I say, yeah, I believe in life after death, well, I need to base that on something rather than pure faith. It needs to have an objective, logically defensible conclusion. And of course, with that particular case, I use near-death experiences, shared death experiences, deathbed visions, paranormal activity. There's several different things. When you group them together, it really provides a pretty good conclusion, you know, a defensible conclusion that we survive death. So the same thing is true with reincarnation, and that's what I'm trying to do, not only for myself, but also in the interest of teaching this stuff, that there need, you know, what kind of a logically defensible conclusion do we have for reincarnation? And that's why I am considering that alternative, which I just mentioned. You know, could it be the mind's language and not reincarnation? Or could it be reincarnation and not the mind's language? Or could it be both? Who knows? You know, here's a couple of other questions from the chat room. I can get them. Have you ever had a case when learning of a past life has ended in a negative experience?
Oh, lots. My own personal experiences, for one. But,
How so?
You know, when I first started, you know, exploring my own past lives, I had gone to, visited many past lives where I was betrayed, I was beaten, I was murdered. I mean, they were horrible, horrible experiences, you know, just looking at the surface. And, but each one of these experiences that I had gone to, I had such profound lessons that I brought back. And, for example, there was an experience that I had where I was, betrayed by someone very close to me. And, because of that betrayal, I was ousted from the community. And then kind of went into hiding, and then was found, you know, someone found me in hiding, and the community kind of put me out in the open, and they murdered me in front of, they stoned me to death.
Wow.
And they murdered me in front of the whole, you know, the whole community, and it was, you know, rah, rah, rah. And I remember, you know, remembering that life now, looking back and seeing all these angry faces in the crowd and feeling the pain from the boulders, the rocks that were being thrown at me, and in that moment, right before I died, I was, you know, really much bludgeoned to death, and in that moment, I had the opportunity to be really angry and to curse these people and to really die in anger and fear, and it was at the very, and I remember it was at the very last moments of that life when I chose to forgive, and I chose to say that they just don't understand, and it was at that point that I exited my body, and I write about it in the book, and I write about the lessons that I took from that, and so they're very, for me, in the role that I have in this life and understanding that role, a lot of the experiences that I had that we deemed to be negative were really things that were needed for my soul progression in order for me to learn, so that I may be able to help others. And so, you know, my path has been a very arduous and tough path, because in order for me to be able to teach and to be able to talk about it and be able, to be able to do the work that I do, I have to understand what that means to be on the other side. And so my soul chose very hard, tough things to go through in order to be able to understand compassion, to be able to move past the fear and the pain and all of the things that, you know, would be rightful to do, But that's not part of what I do in my work. And my work is really about, you know, moving back to the love and moving back to we're all connected and moving back to we are all here to learn our lessons, and we all have roles to play. We all help each other in our own way. So that, for me, my own person, I'm not even talking about clients. I've had very many negative lives.
And what you said is absolutely true, and it's certainly good for, you know, your own work now. But let me redirect the question a little bit. Has any of these past life recalls resulted in negative experiences in the present life?
Oh, you mean after having a past life regression experience, and then the client has a negative experience from it?
Mm-hmm.
No, I haven't had that.
Okay.
No.
Cool. Here's another question. Got a few questions. Kathy wants to know, I'm curious as to how dementia ties in with past lives. For example, people with dementia forget their own lives while they're alive. I understand this is caused from the death of that part of the brain. So when the whole body dies, is it possible? Hold on one sec. The continuation that memories survive on a different level in order to be recalled by someone later.
I'm definitely not a medical doctor, but definitely dementia is, in my personal opinion, dementia is definitely a split of dimensions, so to speak. And so where that person is and what they have access to and being able to, you know, go back and forth in those different and not remember and things like that, they definitely is a dimensional glitch, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as it reverts to past lives, the only thing that I can speak to that as far as a past life is concerned is that person or that soul has to have this experience in this life, because that experience is somehow tied to an overall soul lesson and progression.
Okay.
So it's larger than this life. It because we are so much larger than the life that we are conscious of right now. And so having that experience goes back, ties back to an overall soul experience that's needed.
Good. And, you know, and just my own thoughts on the dementia or mental illness, it's much like, you know, not you, Melissa, but a person and a computer. You know, if you've got memories, quote unquote, stored on your hard drive, on your computer, you have the graphical user interface to interact with it, your keyboard, your mouse, your screen. But if something happens to your computer, you don't have access to those memories anymore. So in a similar fashion, it's like consciousness is, you know, the mind is, well, you know, it's integrated with the physical body in this life. And so sometimes people just can't access it. It gets, you know, there's a glitch in the hardware, so to speak. Couple of other questions. Can the cycle be broken of your reincarnations? Like the Buddhists, they believe they can break their cycle of life and death, or of life, death, and rebirth by following the Buddhist sutras. So can the cycle be broken of the reincarnation? And that gets into free will. I mean, do you have the choice to come back or not?
Right, and that's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, as far as the cycle, you see, when we speak of ourselves and you know, the cycles and things, we're really speaking from in our own consciousness where we are now. In most cases, we speak from the parts that we're playing and not from the wholeness of where we are. So it's almost like the slice of pizza trying to speak for the entire pie. And, you know, when you talk about breaking cycles and deciding whether or not to come back, when we start to speak from those levels, you know, and decisions or not decisions, you know, we have to really go within and really come from the whole of who we are. And so it's really difficult to say, well, you know, in this life, I think I'm going to break this cycle because I'm going to do this. And it goes way beyond making that kind of decision now in this life, because we still, as they say, there's still a veil to some degree, and so it's really hard to say from that perspective. Do we have the choice of when we come back or when not to come back? Absolutely, yes.
Good.
But
good answer.
But that's kind of as far as I can go with that one.
Well, and let me add to it, because I've also had a couple of quasi-breakthroughs in my own reincarnation research in the last week or so, and I'll share those with everybody. One of them relates to free will, because that's one of my issues. You know, it would seem by some religious beliefs that you don't really have a choice. Like, you know, your karma, you got to come back, you got to learn your lessons, and it's all, you know, in an effort to be one with God. And I'm sitting here thinking, why in the hell would I want to be one with God? I want to, you know, assassinate him. So I don't, you know, for crimes against humanity, but that's my belief system. So I don't really, you know, I don't really believe in God anyway. So the point is that do we have free will? And my conclusion is yes, just like yours. Free will is a universal law. It's a constant. It's a like a physical law. It's a universal law. So with that reasonable approach, we must have the free will to come back. Another question, and this is going fast. I mean, you're a great guest.
we'll have to
pay all those millions to come back on more often.
I'll be there.
Yeah, please. Okay, so in the next 10 or 15 minutes or so, I want to also cover another little breakthrough I've had on one of my issues with reincarnation, plus talk a little bit more about, you know, reincarnating on other planets or having memories from other planets and so forth. Mm-hmm. But there's a couple of questions. There's a lot of questions. Kathy wants to know, I was wondering if a person sees a life from the past, are they able to determine if what they see is their past life or the life of someone else? I'm not sure if that makes sense to me, because if it's not your past life, whose would it be? So, Kathy, maybe you understand the question, Melissa, I don't know, but if you want to try it again, Kathy, I'll...
Let me explain. Typically, when people go back and they go through the past life, they are actually reliving that life, and so it's like being in a film or you know, really going in it. So it is actually your life. Now, if the question is, do you see people in that life that you may recognize players in this life? Yes, but the lives that you go to or the lives that you know, you visit or you tap into are definitely those of the soul in which is the client, the soul of the client. So you're absolutely right. It is your life that you go to. But then, yes, you do see and recognize other souls that are playing roles in your life today.
Okay. I hope that answers that question, Kathy. If it doesn't, let me know. Let's talk for a second about, you know, past life experiences from other planets. Do you have any clients who've had those, or you yourself, or can you talk a little bit about that?
I have, not me personally, but I've had a few, not a lot, but I've had a few clients that have actually gone back to different systems, different solar systems, different universes, where, you know, things were completely different. It wasn't the energy and the soul, of course, is different, but in what things looked like, some looked alien-like, what we would deem to be, they were described as alien-like. Some looked reptilian-like. Some were just a ball of energy. And so, yes, I have had different clients that have had those experiences, and in their having those experiences, it made sense to them, because somehow on some level they kind of always knew that they had a connection or that they had an understanding that was a little bit different from what we accept as being the norm here in this consciousness, in this dimension. And in some cases it was shocking to know, but then after they got used to the idea and really started to think about it and embrace it and integrate the experience, it started to make sense. So, yes, I've not had the closest thing that I can say that I've had as far as not necessarily another planet, but I was able to live the place where we call in hypnosis the life between lives,
mm-hmm.
where you're in this place and you're not, you know, you're not quote unquote dead, but you're the place. I'm at the place where, you know, decisions are made, where you're with elders or guides or different things like that, but not necessarily from a different planetary or species type.
Interesting.
But
I think. Go ahead.
I have seen it, yes.
Okay.
But I have not personally had that experience.
Well, it makes sense, because one of my other issues was, you know, where all the souls come from. I mean, there's nearly 7 billion people on planet Earth now. Back in 1800, there was about 1 billion. Well, where did the other 6 billion come from, and where will the several more billion come from, you know, in years in the future when there's more people on the Earth? So if you've got a whole universe of pool of, you know, entities, then there's something conceivably that will be learned from different types of, you know, existences. Let me bring up another issue, one of my other issues. I've had several. I wrote about them in my course. And this one has bothered me, and it's the issue that reincarnation devalues blood relationships. In other words, you know, I have a father and a mother, we all do, you know, and I was very close with my father.
Mm-hmm.
He died 9 years ago. And, you know, there was a special relationship there. And so for me, one of the issues I have with reincarnation is, what am I to make of that, quote, special relationship if the possibility exists that, you know, I've had many fathers and it's conceivable that my father could have been my son or daughter or whatever in a past life. You know, the roles could have been reversed. You know, it's like if I've had all these different types of same relationship, it's, you know, it's not the same. The specialness is gone. You know, same with brothers, sisters, whatever, you know, close friends, whatever. And I'll just relay how I think I've figured that one out. For me, anyway, this is me. You know, these are my issues. And I'll own them.
Good for you.
Yeah. But I got thinking the other day. I was actually having a conversation about this with my son, and he loves to debate. So we were in a discussion, a friendly discussion about this, and it hit me. You know, it seems to me to be almost like a play on Broadway or a television sitcom or something like that, where you have a cast of real life human beings, right? They're actors. And during the course of this play or this TV show, a lot of times they'll build some pretty close bonds as real life human beings, not characters, but as these real people. But in the play, in the show, there's a script. There are roles to play. And, you know, one might be the father, one might be the son, one might be the daughter, one might be the kooky friend next door. You know, there are roles within that play, but outside of that, they're colleagues, and they still are close. They have those different. It's a different relationship. So for me, that makes perfect sense in this realm, in this world, in this life, kind of like that play. Some perhaps even scripted in some ways, and we all have our roles. But outside of that, we have a different relationship. That so in this concept, it doesn't lose its specialness for me. That's my stuff, you know, it's my way of explaining it. And I mentioned last week that I would explain that, so I just did. All right. So
and I agree.
Feel free to comment if you'd like.
I totally agree with that. I mean, you said it perfectly. I mean, this dimension that we're in, this current life that we are in, it is very much like a Broadway play where we're playing roles and those roles have purpose, and you're right, and we have different relationships, and those things that we have are built for our progression in this life, or the purpose that we've come to this life in. But outside of that, when the play is over, when the curtains go down, then we become who we really are.
Mm-hmm.
And those relationships and connections that we have with the souls are
the real
eternal
ones. Yeah.
Right.
And special in their own right.
That's right. Absolutely. You absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
So I have, you know, solved one of my issues, maybe a couple. But, you know, hey, I'm working on it, and that's what the purpose of you being here and, you know, getting more insight, looking at exploring it with an open mind. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. there is some part of me that suspects that reincarnation is true. There's some other reasons why I suspect that. And I've talked about this on the show before, mainly my relationship with my wife, Tracy, where I just knew her before when I met her. I knew her, and I've never had that experience with anybody else since or before. There's one other question I'm going to take, one last question from Camille. Before a person taps into their past life experience, are they usually experiencing events, situations that make them search for answers? Is there a trigger mechanism for some but not for others to have this type of experience?
Everybody is different, and typically, not always, but typically, a person is really, like for me, I was having some really tough times in my life. I was internally, it was very successful in corporate America, but wasn't happy. I was in a relationship, off and on relationship for several years, and it finally fell apart. And so they're typically what makes a person decide to look past the Broadway play usually is something that is tough, something that can get our attention or grab us to some degree. And so the triggers are different for everyone. It could be a fear of flying, you know. It could be just traumatic events in one's life, or it could be just a longing, a deep longing that doesn't leave you. And so everyone, the beauty of this Broadway play that we all are in is that, as you mentioned before, that there's free will. And that we can customize how we come to a deeper understanding of ourselves as we need. And so the triggers or the reasons why a person may decide, I mean, a person may be very drawn to a place and not understanding why. Or, just like in your case, you may instantly know someone. And you know that you know them, and you've never met them before. But it's broader the way of what brings a person to maybe want to have a past life regression experience. It could be anything.
Good answer. All right. Tell us about your book and where they can get it, your website, and those in the greater New York City area can come and visit you.
Sure. The name of the book is Lessons of Many Lives, and you can get it at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any of the e-tailers, or you can just Google me, Melissa Watson, type in, and it'll come up. And basically the book is really about my experience, and I go in great detail about the experience that led me to do the work that I do, and talks a lot about my experiences in the chair with my hypnotherapist, and then goes on into my own experiences as being a hypnotherapist and some of the cases that I had. My website is www.ephcenter.com. And you can, if you want to send me an email, you can email me at Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, at ephcenter.com. And I personally answer all my emails. That's very important to me. A person takes time out to ask a question, I think that I should take time out to answer. I may not get back to you right away, but I definitely will answer.
Well, great. Well, Melissa, it's been a real pleasure having you on the program. Appreciate your perspectives and your experience. I really thank you for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you, Doug. As before and even now, it's a wonderful experience. I love being here, and I love talking about my passion and what I love, and I love the questions, and it's just a wonderful thing. I love what you're doing.
Well, I appreciate that, and I wish you the very best in your continued success, and, you know, let me know if you come across any new stuff and you want to come on and talk about it. You're always welcome.
Will do. Thank you so much.
All right.
Have a wonderful evening.
You as well. I'll let you go, and I'll continue the program, and take care and have a great week, Melissa.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, great interview, great ideas, great concepts, interesting, if nothing else, and really appreciate Melissa coming on and sharing some of her work and some of her experiences with us. I am working on a guest for the next week or two, somebody that I interviewed recently, actually last Wednesday night, by the name of Mark L. Cowden over in Ireland, and actually an American over there in Ireland. Very, very grounded, down-to-earth guy who has got some great things to share. So I'm working on getting him scheduled for either next week or the week after, whenever he's available, so we'll have him on. Be sure and take a second and send out some positive energy to those who might need it, people who might be having a hard time. Always a good thing to do. Appreciate everybody joining us tonight. Appreciate your questions. If you like what you're hearing, I invite you to join the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science. You'll find us on the web at mchschurch.org. If you'd like to learn more about metaphysics and even get your PhD degree in metaphysics, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. Pretty much wraps up my part of the program. Stay tuned for Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective coming up in just a few minutes after a song or two. She'll take your calls. This is Doug Kelly encouraging you to listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Have a great week, everyone.
This has been Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly. To learn more about the concepts presented in this program, visit mchschurch.com. To take a metaphysics course or to get your metaphysics degree, visit metaphysicsinstitute.com.
Power the Spirit is a production of the Metaphysical Church of Humanistic Science, Incorporated.
This is the MCHS Educational Network. Please visit us at mchschurch.org. This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective on the MCHS Educational Network. And now, Dr. Vicky Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. This is Dr. Vicky's Psychic Perspective. If you have any questions at all, you can call in 714-459-3973, and of course, it's on the top of the screen. Have any questions also for the chat room, please feel free to ask. We were talking during the break, Doug and I, even though I always have a theme I like to go with, and with the show, in case you know people aren't having any questions. And but Doug and I were talking about, this is such a wonderful topic. I would like to stay in keeping with that and keep Doug on the line. And we can have a conversation, and if anybody has questions for both of us, that would be great. But I got a few questions for Doug, too, and his experiences, and happy to share a few of my own. So, Dr. Doug, come on back.
I are here.
Good thing. You were talking about your epiphany about past life, past lives and reincarnation, and that it's all a play. And do you feel now that this has given even more value to the relationships that you have?
Good question.
Do you see all the relationships differently now?
Well, obviously with that scenario, with the concept that we have a colleague relationship, a close bond of relationship outside of this particular, quote, play, unquote, What it does do, or what it doesn't do, is it doesn't take away the specialness of the relationship. I would assume, knowing me as I do, that the ones on the other side, these characters, these cast members, if you will, I would be very close with, because that's just who I am. You know, I enjoy that with people, so it hasn't. It's no longer a big issue for me. That's all I could. That one point on reincarnation that was holding me back is no longer an issue. That one.
So, is it reasonable to say then that maybe there just hasn't been enough time yet for you to take new views of different dynamics with people, such as your son or your mother or other people that you might have had relationships with, that were good or bad or indifferent or otherwise, that maybe we've all known each other in a past life? Because that's a theory, that we don't meet anyone in this lifetime who we haven't met before.
Yeah.
Actually, that's been a theory that came to me probably back in the early 70s, mid-70s. So that's kind of stuck with me, that whoever I'm encountering, I know them at some level. Some are more important than others. Perhaps it's just a supporting role. I don't know about now, whether the earth is just so saturated with souls and we have such a density of population. I don't know about that, but I think the primary characters, perhaps.
I was just thinking as you were talking how, if that's true, if reincarnation is true, and that could have some pretty interesting implications for crappy relationships that we have, especially with family, in this life. You know, if everybody's playing a role, if everybody's in that role. Kathy in the chat room was talking about how, you know, there's that concept that we get to decide before we are born who we choose for a family to be born into. And that would go right along with this. If we choose these roles, these cast member roles, you know, for various reasons to learn, it places the current relationships in a bit of a different light. This is kind of a sudden realization I'm having on the air, live, right here, but not from New York City.
Well, I think that's great. I'm going to add a little bit to that, what Kathy's saying and what you've just said, is I don't necessarily believe that we want those people, that particular individual as a parent or as a sibling, but we're looking for the essence of experience that those happen to be the characters that were available.
Okay.
Because I'm not entirely convinced that I wanted exactly that individual as a mother and that individual as a father and those individual siblings. I think that there are people who represent certain experiences to us, if that makes sense.
Right.
So there's an experience to have.
Okay. You could be right. I mean,
I don't know.
And that's the whole point. And so, you know, reincarnation is going to be one of those things where there's not going to be any one thing that will convince me of its reality or not. It's like survival of the consciousness after the death of the body. There is not one thing that sends me over the edge in a good way, you know what I mean, to believe it. Reincarnation is going to be much the same way. I have these different points that I enumerated on a previous show and we'll bring up as necessary, but that's one of them. And I'm going to have to now ponder the implications of what we just talked about. If my alcoholic mother chose that role to be in, you know, it doesn't mean I'm going to necessarily reestablish the relationship in this life, but it does throw things in a different light.
Well, and I might say too that maybe you came to that particular woman who happened to be an alcoholic, but maybe she was new in the play. Maybe it was the addictions or the what that behavior represents is the essence of the experience, but maybe that particular woman is a brand new character. You know, and I just entertain these ideas because I like you, I've been having these experiences like since I have early childhood memory, but I have enough of a logical, pragmatic mind that I want to understand it sensibly. That also helps me stay grounded. So I entertain these theories. When I have met someone, I absolutely know I've known them in a past life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so powerful that it's like, I know you. And I know you mentioned something about when you and Tracy had first met, this is on the Paranexus show, that you just knew each other. And it's just that connection that you have. But I don't have that same, and geez, this is metaphysics, is my life, but I don't have one bit of past life recall with my parents. And I wonder, it could very well be an emotional block. It could be, perhaps, because it wasn't a particularly kind childhood. Maybe I have a psychological block there. I have never explored where I may have known them before. I never thought about it until this very moment, which is an epiphany for me also. I just never thought.
Well, we're all full of epiphanies now, aren't we?
Well, that's why I love the. I'm gonna tell you this, Doug. I love this program. I do, and I love the school. I love the church, because it opens this dialogue, and it's been, I'll tell you, certainly beneficial to me. I've had lots of revelations, and the sharing of this experience, of many of these experiences, just that dialogue. It's like finding a new angle.
Well, that's
you know,
the thing, yeah. Like minds, and iron sharpens iron, and that's the whole point of getting people attracted to this program, to the church, to the school, is to get like minds together to sharpen one another. You know, not in the spirit of competitiveness, not in, you know, this way is better than that way. It's let's find the truth of existence, of consciousness. Let's answer some questions. We're probably never going to be able to prove them scientifically, you know, with objective proof, not for a very, very long time. But at this point, we can, like I said in my previous program, we can come up with a logically defensible conclusion based on reasonable and grounded evidence. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, whenever I am looking for something that makes sense, let's say I think I have a brilliant idea, which, you know, I have lots of brilliant ideas. That doesn't mean they're smart or wise. But, you know, I have an idea, and I need to see how that idea works at every level. In other words, spiritually, mentally, emotionally, and physically. And I need to see how it threads together. And as long as it makes sense at every level, then I go with it. I have to be really honest with myself. And I say, wow, that's a brilliant notion. But then I go to take it to a spiritual level, and I say, well, that doesn't work. Well, that was dumb. Well, I guess I have to start over. No? Because there's something just missing from my puzzle, or maybe I just put too much in it, because I think sometimes we can impose too much theory. At least I have a tendency to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So how does it make sense at every level? Or, you know, like the four corners, or, you know, the four elements, and so on. Like, it has to have a sensibility. You know, very often when people have studied religion, I've spoken with, I do suggest that they look at the thread that goes through all religion. What does all religion say? And it's that people are seeking. It's not necessarily the dogma, unless
right.
It's to hang out with fun people. It's what's the thread that binds it? Well, it speaks of love. You know, all religions, because spiritually I think everyone innately is seeking that love.
Well, I think that all of these religions and all of these philosophies, there's a plethora of them, many of them, numerous philosophies, all trying to answer those big questions. Who are we? Where do we come from? Where are we going? What's the nature of consciousness? What's the nature of our existence? Do we live on after death in this life?
Mm-hmm.
They're all trying to answer those things. But I think, and those are big questions. But,
sure.
You know, and the more I am into this, the longer I'm into this, yes, we can formulate some of our own opinions and based on whatever evidence we come across. But it's almost not so much what is the meaning of life. It's more what's the meaning of my life.
Mm-hmm.
What am I here for? What am I supposed to do? What really thrills me? What do I call a good day? And that you just mentioned, that love, you know, that's a thread that obviously is, well, it's threaded throughout everything. If we don't have love, we're not doing this program. If we don't have love, we're not in a school trying to get more education in order to help people. If we don't have love, we're not learning spiritual counseling or coaching or holistic healing or hypnosis or whatever. If we don't have love, you know, we're not going to be doing any of this. So we all have love on some level, to some degree. And again, I'll say it, the thing that just I love about this field, about the metaphysics community, is that and every one of my students, if they all have the same a goal. They all want to help other people in an effort to raise the vibrational level of this planet, of humanity. They want to raise the human condition, empower it. That is a tremendously and deeply, profoundly encouraging thing for Doug.
And then Doug. What your school does that I have so appreciated is that if you're going to give, you got to know what that is. So you got to study yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
That's
where
it all
is. You have to know yourself. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, I'm just going to shift gears here for a minute, Doug. Catherine's asking, she made a statement here that I really would like to address because it's something I have put a tremendous amount of thought into myself. She says, maybe it's not reincarnation at all, just spiritual time warps. Maybe... We're here now, and they're now in the future all at the same time. The notion of quantum physics is exactly that. As a matter of fact, I just wrote about it today, that all things are happening simultaneously, that there's infinite numbers of dimensions of realities. What I satisfy myself to say is that reincarnation is like pulling out a thread in a blanket. And it's a view of consciousness, a view of the soul experience, a view of memory. And so if we are this huge tapestry of infinite possibilities, I pull out one thread. And in many lifetimes, in these many lifetimes, that thread tells a story of those many lifetimes. And I'm satisfied with that. Because there are too many mysteries, and I know I'm not going to get to all those bases in this lifetime.
Mm.
You know, my blessed teacher, bless her, who passed in 1979, she said to me, she was totally ready to leave this world, and she said, I have had very many questions that I have not found the answers to, but I've given a lot of my questions to you. Now you find the answers. And I just know that I'm going to be able to pass that on to somebody.
Yeah, that's funny.
That it's just okay to not have all the answers. What I love is the exercise of my intelligence, of my sense of spirit, that there it explains will, and it explains desire, and it explains that... you know, who we are as being more than just this body, you know, just this bunch of thoughts in my brain and a body, that just wouldn't cut it for me. However, I am a little bit different in that for as a child, I had past life memory. My conundrum in this lifetime is understanding what the heck happened to the earth.
Yeah, we all have that question.
You're like, this, I was 5 years old, and I said, this isn't supposed to be like this, you know. It's not how I left it.
Wrong timeline.
and so it's what happened, but I wanted to know more of what's happened in the last 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 years. And, of course, you know, starting in politics and, you know, global business, and we all get it, but... I had to satisfy my mind that about being human in this timeline. Being in this timeline was very difficult for me. So most people, just about all the people I talk to, minus just a handful, are the other way, where, okay, we're in this life, okay, I'm buying into this, and now, whoa, a past life, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it changes... The brain patterns begin to change, and you can see light bulbs going on. It's a little bit different than, you know, buying into the company's pension plan and then finding out that, well, that was really a big hoax. It really is no pension plan. It's different than when you say, you know, I'm a human being just trying to get through the day, and reincarnation, past life, what? The soul or the spirit feels happy. I believe this. The soul is so happy to be acknowledged.
Well, that's part of human nature, too. Soul nature, if you will.
So then it's just the brain that has to reconcile its patterns.
Yeah. Hey, let me just interject the thought to the listeners, the live listeners. If you have a question that you'd like to get some advice on from Dr. Vicky, feel free to call in. The numbers are on your screen, 714-459-3973. John Hightower is waiting and ready to take your call and get you through to us. So
yeah,
if you have
John,
questions
thanks.
About life, call in.
Thanks for that, Doug. If you also, I see a couple of new names in the chat room. Anybody else, if maybe you're not comfortable with phoning in or your phone package doesn't have it, whatever, just if you want to put your birthday and a question onto the chat, then I'll be happy to do what I can to see kind of where you're at in your life at this time, and if I can answer your question and how it might energy applies to the question. All right. Let me see here.
So,
I am.
So I just, we've been talking about reincarnation, and really different dimensions and things. And of course, the first half of the show, we had Melissa Watts on to discuss that. Fascinating stuff. Did you have, did you want to get into any other aspects of it, or?
Well, I think that Melissa is right on it, and I love how she's expanded her own mind to be so accepting of the individual experience, which is so rare in her field, in a lot of fields. She's not in any way imposing to judge or to... I'm sorry, Doug, I'm getting kind of blipped with some spam here, believe it or not. This something is happening here. So if I'm a little...
Are you talking about Skype?
No, just something else. I got too many different little... I think it's Skype chats going at the same time.
Oh, yeah, I just
and then,
mentioned...
And then I also get these other... oh, you know, from Russia. One to meet girl from Russia. You know,
right? Yeah, that's one of those things on Skype.
It's
so Melissa really got it going, and you know, and she's a very nice lady, and so
terrific lady. I think that it's so it happens that people impose their ideas or their opinions, and what I so appreciate, Melissa, if you're listening, if you stayed on the line of the show to listen. I so appreciate your openness and your just neutrality, I think, is a good word, because we're all conditioned or programmed into belief systems, and it's very difficult very much of the time to deprogram, to be acceptant. Like if I am, you know, I don't care what religion people are, honestly, because spirit doesn't care. When I sit with people and I do readings, to be in that neutral place and just to be with people, it's not always easy, because people impose fears, they impose their ideologies. And Melissa doesn't do that, and that excites me, very excites me. David, I see you are asking about a situation. Excuse me, with your family. 09/05/1972. I love this, actually. Remote Rosemary's there, too. David, what I do is I add up all the numbers in your birthday, and that gives me your birth pass number, year 6. Then I add the month and the day, which this year... which then is, it's a 9. Wow, you're certainly having some revelations this year. being a number 6, you are, 6 is a service number. It's a family number. It's wonderful for loyalty, you know, all those wonderful commitment qualities. And it does tend to overcommit or over nurture at times, or even submit too much, because it's very committed to family and community. I'd be surprised if you don't work in the community, which, you know, I'm assuming that you do, working with people, because you have to do that. In a 9 year, you're going to have a lot of revelations about priorities. You're going to have a lot of revelations about where and how you want to share yourself, and how much of yourself you're going to share. 9 is an awakening. You know, 9 can be quite... there's a trick about the 9 number. It can cancel itself out in deducing numbers, meaning to say it can be invisible. So you will be as visible or invisible to the people in your family and your community as you choose to be. So I don't... No, certainly, if that answers your particular question, except that my sense is I want to say to you to find your voice in a good way. That's what I'd like to say to you. That feels right for me. So I hope that helps you. Rosemary, you are an 05-02-1951. And yeah, absolutely. You know, you can break it right down to time as well. But I'm just going to take the day, month, and the year. And you're a five. Now, oh yes, fives do have their challenges, I tell you. Because five is very adventurous. It's an adventurous number. You're in a two vibration year, Rosemary. So you're doing a lot of follow-through this year. You're cleaning up. So when you say you're trying to purge negativity to walk more in more light, it's really about cleaning house, and probably at every level. Last year, you would have made a lot of changes, initiated a lot of things to go, got to get going. Two is the follow-through. How do you sustain that energy? And sustaining energy means to continually clean and build. So purging negativity, I don't know if it's so much for you about, purging negativity in this year as it is knowing what you have to work with and building on that. So it's that continual building. I also want to acknowledge the age cycle that you're in. A 1951, you're just finishing a one cycle. There's seven-year cycles. It takes us to the age of 49. 49 to 56, well, you're in a two. 56 to 63, we start 1, 2, 3 again. So in that 56 to 63 age group, is that follow through, that building? So imagine the age of 7 to 14, discovery, testing, you know, except that we're older, smarter, and walk, talk, chew gum. Mm-hmm. So you're really testing things out and building on top. So don't hesitate to keep going, because my sense is you're on the right path. You just got to have that confidence, that self-certainty, to esteem yourself, that you're okay even when everyone around might be different. So I hope that helps you. Just build on the good stuff, Rosemary. Just keep doing that. Three is next year for you. Next year's a 3-year. It's going to all really make sense and come together. So for the next few months, just that continual building, keep building. And then it's Bruce. Bruce is saying, have I met the one? you're a 7-7, Bruce. In a 1974, let me see. So I assume that means, have you met the one who is the relationship for you? Well, you know, you also are in a 9 cycle, Bruce. You made a lot of changes last year in your life. I think the challenge may not be so much about, don't bite me for this one. It may not be so much that is she the right one for you? It's, are you the right one for her? Did you work through and did you follow through with those epiphanies last year? Like, did you get it? Because if you did, you know, your instincts are sharp and you can build from a healthy place. Because hear me, everyone, please. Two people can meet who are absolute so-called soulmates. It doesn't mean they're going to make it together. You know, it's somebody, everything from addictions to bad behavior to social contaminations, it affects people. It's like soulmates, they love each other, they're together, but you know what? This bites. It hurts. So if love hurts, you ought not to be there. Cool. So this is where I say, you know, build on the good stuff. If it feels good, keep going, but it feels good at all levels. So if you feel connected at a spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical level, then you give a little, she gives a little. You give a little, she gives a little, till you find your middle space. Because I say it's two individuals with a space between that becomes that third part of the triangle. That's the relationship is between you. You never surrender your identity. So, and I know you're going to agree with that, Doug.
Wow, I couldn't agree with it more. You always have to maintain your own identity. And that
Absolutely.
Space in between, that means maintain your own space as well. We all need downtime. We all need personal space, personal time. Doesn't mean that the other person doesn't like you or whatever. It just means we all need our space and our
absolutely.
Identity.
Yes, absolutely. When we give too much without a return, it's like we feel like we're dying because we haven't got all our spirit with us. You haven't got all your energy with you. So it's a whole individual giving what they know to give and a whole individual giving what they know to give to that space between where everybody is getting fed in the in-between place. So, I don't know, Bruce, I hope that helps you. I hope you can, you know, work with that a little bit. I think you're on the right track. That's my feeling for you. Keep in mind, this is... Blog Talk Radio chat room, you know? I mean, but I can generally tune in fairly well. Rosemary is just offering a little comment here, Doug. Spot on. I am in a mental house cleaning mode, learning to deal with my empath abilities, limitations, possibilities, and trying to get rid of what holds me back. I just want to add one little thing to that, Rosemary. When we're done with something, we don't have to try to get rid of it. It gets rid of itself. So just shift your view just a little bit. Just shift it over. You don't have to get rid of anything. When you're done with it, it goes away. And because your energy now is going in another direction. Does that make sense, Doug?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually another good way of looking at it. You know, don't get rid of it, just shift and it will just go away. It's like what I've long said, you know, what I learned from James Allen and As a Man Thinketh, you know, a book that's well over 100 years old. You know, when you learn the spiritual lesson contained in something, your present circumstances will pass and you'll move on to other learning opportunities. So we have to learn the lesson, not just be aware of it. And when we learn the lesson, that means we change. So it could mean changing your viewpoints, changing your beliefs, changing your self-beliefs, changing your beliefs about other people, about life, about whatever, about taking your power back. You know, of course, my panacea for everything is take your power back. It cures all that ails you. If you learn who you are, accept who you are unconditionally, take your power back, protect your boundaries, establish them first, and not keep setting that stick further and further back every time somebody crosses it. Take your power back.
Absolutely. I just think that when we have thought something to death, we have emotioned it to death,
mm-hmm.
we get really sick of ourselves. You know, it's like I get more tired of me than I do other people, and I got to move on now. So it's that usually when I get tired of me, I know that I have to move to another thought. Another feeling, I have to shift gears and just be really as
yeah.
loyal as I can to myself.
You get tired of thinking of something or battling with something or a thought or a concept or fear or stress or whatever.
Usually for me that's about 10 minutes now. I like to move through a day. That's not to say I won't give myself, you know, a down day of just, let's say, cleaning house, and maybe that's my mental house. But in the course of a day, I like to move through it, achieving many things. I like to move through it creatively. And sometimes that means to put a time limit on what I'm thinking about. You know, and I have to, and if I have trouble doing that, I usually put on a piece of music. And I know what kind of music is going to put me in what kind of a mood, so that I don't overthink things. You know, I don't stay emotionally stuck. You know, I have my house cleaning music, or I have some other music. Mostly I live in silence, and I can talk myself through things or just go do something else. But I do understand very well how easy it is to get stuck, like to get feel that stuck thing. Well, then you got to get out of the chair, you know.
Speaking of sticking things, Camille's keys were sticking. Stinking. Was that a Freudian slip? Are they smelly, too?
Well, Rosemary, she's adding that first I have to add to myself that I have to let go. Then I let go, and I've given up a lot in this life. Absolutely, that's wonderful, Rosemary. You know, wisdom doesn't come cheap. So, you know, we don't just talk through our, you know, we've all got a story.
Now, how are you going to say that one?
Well, I did. So it's but again, this is part of the learning, and that we can each share with each other that we can get through it. What we all have an appreciation of is that we are spiritual beings as well as human beings, and we can have that other aspect element to enter into it, that, you know, this very moment isn't it, you know, but it is it in the be here now, but it's not all there is. So I can move into the next moment and get to know myself better.
Camille has an interesting question, too, in the chat.
Okay, I just saw that. Your husband, yourself, and two daughters, all our birthdays are divisible by 7. Does this have any meaning? Sure, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a real interesting vibrational connection. You know, let me tell you just a little bit about the number 7. Because I may have said this in a previous show, but I'll say it again because I love talking about this. 7, people think is the mysterious, the mystical, the magical, the, you know, bet the 7 at the slots, that kind of thing. Lucky 7. 7 is a fundamental number in our reality, in our collective unconscious. It's, there's 7 days in a week. There are 7 52-minute cycles in a day. There are 7 52-day cycles in a year. It's fascinating. And 52, yeah, that's a 7. We live a 7. We live in the 7. So it's that fundamental number that often gets taken for granted. People overlook it. So she just said in the chat, we are very strong personalities. I'll bet 7 is that it's grounded. It works. Basically, if somebody's in a 7 year, I know that it's a year for crossing T's and dotting I's, because 7 will not, it will not let anything go. So one of the things all of you, I'll betcha, all of you have to learn is to let go a little bit, back up and give people space. You know, so it's let each 7 breathe and then see how the 7s all work together as the unit in that, you know, fundamental flow to life. Very interesting. By the way, when somebody has a 7 in a business, and I've done this to myself, 7 really will have, it has, it's meticulous to detail. Everything must be meticulous or that business won't move forward. So I'm going to even take some of that little edge of philosophy, Camille, and say that probably raising kids with 7s like that, there could have been some blows. You know, if nobody lets go, it's funny, huh? Very funny. Crossing T's, dotting I's, yeah, it just won't let go until every detail is covered. I bet you that at the supper table is a lot of chatter. Either that or everybody goes dead quiet, one of the two. So it's, that is a good question. Something that triggers in me, Doug, I don't know if you have noticed this, but you look at a clock and it says 11:11.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
All the time?
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it just says 7:07. Or, you know, there's these numbers. I have been asked this by people in the past, and I didn't have an answer. I finally sought some advice from a friend of mine who, he believes he's from the future. I'm with it. I totally will go with that. He said that's a code. It's that people who are in a particular frequency are coding, and we will note these things. He would even say that some people are being sent coded messages numerically, because everything is math in the universe. But people who are on a particular frequency will be noting, their consciousness is noting these numbers in daily life more than, let's say, other people would. Like, lots of people look at the clock, but it's not going to say 11:11. It's going to say, you know, they're going to notice it at 11:09.
2:22.
Oh, big time. Now, he also said to me, because I called him up one day and said, you know, I've been seeing this 7-7 all the time. He goes, oh, you're in the 7 vibration, are you? Well, there's a lot to learn in that one. I said, oh, don't I know it. But it has a code. So, you know, I mean, how energies work in the universal principles, I'm not entirely sure, because that just expanded my consciousness into a whole new realm for learning. But I just thought I'd bring it up because the number thing was mentioned. Very interesting. You've had it happen a lot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Actually, Tracy and I notice it quite often. I mean, not every day, not necessarily every week, but sometimes several times a week. And, you know, it just comes and goes. I don't know personally if there's any real significance to it, but, you know, I mean, there's also the subconscious, too, or the unconscious mind that can, you know, draw your attention, that notices everything. So, who knows? Interesting
yeah,
to consider.
It is. Catherine just mentioned in the chat room, where are these codes coming from? And then government or aliens.
Are there any other choices?
Yeah, they're having a little giggle there in the chat room about this for those people who are listening in the archives later. Yes, I mean, the theory is that there's some alien coding, government coding. I don't know. I just find it really fascinating. I say, wow, I did it again today, you know, or that happened 3 times today. If I think that sometimes just the acknowledgement of an event opens the mind to other thoughts that I wouldn't otherwise have had. So just recognizing things, acknowledging them, it just says, okay, now I can ask more questions in that way that I wouldn't have known to ask before. And I think that's a continual. So I recommend to anybody, you know, if there's stuff going on around you, it means something, but it means something to you. And it just opens the mind, which is the whole point, isn't it? The whole point. I have so enjoyed this show. I so enjoyed Melissa Watts. I certainly hope you can have her back again, Doug.
You know, there is one other thing I wanted to, and I know you'll probably get into this on another show, but mm-hmm. I wanted to see if we could mention about passion just briefly.
Absolutely. This was actually one of the topic that I had set out for this evening, and it's an important distinction. I guess it is in keeping with some of what we've been talking about. Passion versus emotion. I know some people might get trail away in their minds with the word passion, but it's passion is from the soul. It's from deep within. It's that energy that's deep within. It doesn't necessarily mean that's somebody who's overly emotional when they're very passionate. And just because someone is passionate, you know, vice versa. Passion is that internal love of something, that internal, where is your passion? What's the desire? What motivates somebody? What is the mission? What's that something that drives somebody to pursue an interest or study? It's that something deep inside
And that's a good description. And I don't want you to go through your material, because I know you'll probably get into it very deeply on another program. but I, very passionately, should I say?
Yes.
But one of the things that I know you had told me you were thinking about that, and I know we're getting toward the end of this program. We're going to wrap it up here.
Yeah.
Before long here. But the reason I brought it up, and you had a great explanation of it, is we've talked tonight about reincarnation, past lives, and many other things. You know, where's your passion? We've talked about people who are in this field and what they want to do. Where's your passion? What do you want to get out? Why are you here? Why are you listening to this show? What do you want? What are you trying to achieve? What do you want to see in the world? And you have to look inside and find that burning message, that burning passion that drives you. And that's really the extent that, we've talked about reincarnation. Why are we even interested? Because that's part of our passion. It's part of what we're trying to figure out. So I just wanted to kind of connect everything we've talked about tonight with that one final thought, and I'm sure you'll...
Well, if I can just add one more thing to that. No, I just, because something that it's a slight little irritant to me in this common popular New Age movement is that to be enlightened means that you're at peace and peaceful and quiet and soft-spoken and gentle and wonderful. Well, Doug, I tried that. And I damn near gave myself an ulcer. Because it's not my nature.
Right.
I am at peace with myself. I do feel that center energy with myself. But there's these mythical ideas that go around that we often buy into, and I bought into it myself, that if we go this way, it means that. If I go that way, it means this. Well, I can only go my way. And my way is, I just tell people right now, I'm Scorpio. And that Scorpio energy is passionate. Three stages of Scorpio, I'm told. That serpent underground mystical energy into the eagle, into the dove. Well, I'm still looking for dovedom. But I like to believe that in this energy that I have, it's natural and it's passionate. And I know how to be quiet. I can be still. I can, be in the, in the quiet of myself. But it doesn't mean that I'm going to be boring to myself and give myself an ulcer. So be passionate. Give yourself to the world. Speak on your own behalf from that wonderful place deep inside. Just be you. And nobody can ask anything else of you. It's just be yourself in the world. Explore your ideas, find your mission, and go forward.
And Kathy says, would you say that enlightenment is a feeling of balance within yourself and harmony with your body, mind, and soul? And I would say yes.
Oh, you just summed it up, Catherine. Good for you. Perfect. Thank you very much for that. Again, it's been a great show. It's been a great Sunday evening. I so look forward to Sunday evenings, and I look forward to next week. Please tell your friends, tell other people, share the experience. They can have a listen, plug in, get it in the archives. Don't hesitate to tell your friends to call in, and we are here to help.
That's and visit us at the church too, mchschurch.org. If you want to learn more about metaphysics, get your degree, metaphysicsinstitute.org.
Thank you very much, Doug Kelly, and good night, everyone. Have a good week.
Good night.